It's 8:15 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, Jesse Hunt started with U.S. Ski and Snowboard as a coach back in 1993 before becoming the Alpine director, serving in that position between 2002 and 2009, then leaving to lead the Park City Ski Team in June 2009. That's now morphed into the executive director position for the Park City Ski and Snowboard Team. Jesse Hunt joins me now in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Well, so congratulations, because you've made the decision to go back to U.S. Ski and Snowboard.
That's right. Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that.
So as Alpine director, again, a role that you have served in previously, as I recall, you were pretty excited to take the job with Park City Ski Team, really an opportunity for you to be close to home, watch your own kids ski race. So why the change?
Well, you know, at the time, it really made a lot of sense for me to, I had young kids and family here in Park City, and it made a lot of sense for me to settle down and be local and stay local. And I've really enjoyed the opportunity to be here and be local for the past nine years. And I guess maybe I got the itch to go back on the road and start working internationally again with the national team.
Yeah. So this is not, with U.S. Skiing, a Monday to Friday, 9-to-5 job?
No. This is, well, since it is with the national team, you know, a lot of the teams are training both domestically but internationally as well. So there's a lot of opportunities and requirements to be international and be on the road, and in terms of networking and so forth for the teams, making sure the teams are getting what they need with training opportunities, as well as seeing how they're delivering programming and whatnot. It'll require that I'm on the road quite a bit.
All right. So as Alpine director, you just oversee the Alpine ski racers.
That's correct. I'll be overseeing Alpine on the men's and women's side. So that'll be that'll require, again, that I'm interacting in both domestically with development. There's a development head, Chip Knight, who's leading that effort. He'll be working underneath me domestically. And then, of course, we have our national teams that are competing internationally on the Europa Cup and World Cup.
Okay. And then who do you report to? Directly to Tiger Shaw, CEO?
No, to Luke Bodensteiner, who's the chief of sport at U.S. Ski and Snowboard.
Okay. So what's your relationship with Tiger? I mean, was he actually competing when you first served with the U.S. skiing?
He was on the national team when I was on the national team way back when. So that was back in the 80s. So that's how really I know Tiger. Then, of course, I was with the national team for 16 years and really, really didn't interact with him. In the last time I was with USSA, our paths cross again now.
Yeah. So it seems like, I mean, just U.S. skiing and snowboard, maybe cleaning house. I mean, we saw Patrick Rimmel leaving, which mm-hmm. you're replacing that position. Yeah, we've got Sasha Rierich moving as head Alpine coach down to the development team. So is that something you need to do now, replace that national head coach?
Yes. I mean, we're rebuilding, you know, we're in a rebuilding phase right now, which, you know, it's post-Olympic year, which, you know, obviously all teams at this level are sort of looking at the Olympic quad, that cycle, and evaluating how things went. So it's not uncommon that there's staff changes and things after an Olympics. So this is really the time that happens. And, you know, in this case, I think we have a great opportunity to rebuild our team. And we have some great people. We're putting energy and some great people down at that development level to be sure that we're building up a strong team for the future.
Yeah, I think while the Olympics were okay, I mean, I think they were somewhat disappointing to others. Is that kind of the marching orders, rebuild the team for 4 years from now?
Well, I think, you know, we had some great results at the Olympics. I think right now the goal is really to build up from the base, from our development level, and have a really healthy team in the moving forward. We have a lot of athletes that have been on the team for a number of years who are at the top of their game, you know, whether it be a Lindsey Vonn or a Ted Ligety or a Michaela Schifrin. They're certainly at the top of their game, behind that, we need to do some rebuilding.
Yeah. And let's talk a little bit about that. It was kind of interesting, and I'm trying to think of where I saw it. Maybe just social media or something. You know, it was kind of like the Norwegian men's team, about how they train together, sleep together if they actually have to, eat together. They are a team. And then when you look at how we do things here in America, we have some divas. I mean, you know, Michaela gets her own coach and she trains off on her own. Lindsay kind of does her own thing, does all of her training. Is that something you'll look at recreating? I mean, building a team where everybody trains and eats together?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I like to think that the Norwegians, you know, took a page out of our book when we were building our team. We had a team environment, a team atmosphere. That was our culture. We got, once our stars were born, it got harder to keep that together. And I think that's sort of, you know, what the team's been living through the last 8-9 years. But I, you know, my goal is to get back in there and create a team environment and really build up a healthy, you know, team concept, team atmosphere, team dynamic.
Yeah. What do you think you bring to this job? Certainly, you've done it before.
That's right. Yeah. Well, I think you know, I did it before. It is a very difficult job, and I think you know, there's travel involved, and I think that's sort of what turned me away the first time around. But I think you know, this time I really am energized and ready to build a team again, and it was a great opportunity to, you know, coming in now to really shape it, rebuild it. There's a lot of alignment with among the current staff to go in that direction, to go in the philosophical direction that I see is important at the moment. So it's exciting. It's a great opportunity.
Yeah. Would you do anything different this second time around? Not many people get that opportunity to, you know.
Well, I've certainly learned a lot. It's been really a great experience to be at the club level, running a major club in the country for a number of years. I'm going to bring that experience as well as my experience from the first trip through the first 7 years of being the Alpine director. So together, you know, I've got some, obviously some good experience, and I'm going to tap into that as we move forward. You know, to begin with, I think the clubs have really done a tremendous job at creating the, you know, the grassroots level athlete, and we just need to continue to build on that and encourage that and make sure that those clubs are interacting with us in a positive way. So, as you know, being on the other side of the fence and being part of the club, you know, I'm now, you know, aware of what's really possible there as well. So there's a lot of potential.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. I mean, do you think you learned anything here on the local level at Park City that you can bring up to this new job?
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, you know, again, I think that you understand. I understand to a much better degree just what the clubs are capable of doing and what's possible and the energy and effort that's being put in. So clearly, you know, the clubs are doing a tremendous job at this level, and you know, the question is how to tap into it in the best way, so it's, you know, helping produce top level athletes.
Yeah. So how do you measure success then as Alpine director for US Ski and Snowboard?
Well, I think philosophically driving some of the pieces, you know, one of the things that I think is important is having principles and some values and testing yourself to those values. But also it's results. I mean, the reality is it's professional. It's a high level and elite level, and you're either able to get results with your teams or you're not. And so ultimately, you know, that's a piece. But because of my background and experience, you know, it comes down to really driving some core values, and that's really how you end up getting there. So, you know, that'll one of those core values will be creating a team and building a team, and we'll evaluate ourselves against that as well.
Yeah, kind of a soft-spoken, even-keel kind of guy. I mean, you don't need to be that Vince Lombardi kind of, you know, get-it-done kind of person.
Well, you know, every once in a while that comes out. You know, I don't always use that, but, you know, sometimes you have to put your foot down.
Yeah. It was a huge year for the Park City Club. Of course, you serving as director of the Park City Ski Team for, 8 years, and then making the merger, basically, with a number of the local clubs to become Park City Ski and Snowboard Team. Was that more than you bargained for? I mean, is that part of why you're kind of moving on? You've had enough just managing that?
No, not really. In fact, I was really engaged in this effort to bring the clubs together. I really think it's the right thing for the community, and it's been almost a year now since we really embarked on this, and it's been a lot of work getting to know all the different teams. I've learned a ton over the course of the last 10 months as I've engaged with the other teams, and it's been a fun effort. It's been challenging, but it's a lot of work, as I said. But it's really been fun, and it's going to be an incredible job for the next guy that steps in, because we did a heck of a lot to build the foundation, and it's in a great place right now. In my view, it's in a great place for that next person to step in. So. It's been a great experience. And as I said, I really feel like it's the right thing for the community, and I'm fully behind the effort.
Yeah. So it's not that it burnt you out. It was this other with the national team, just an offer you couldn't refuse.
Well, I think it was an incredible opportunity to return to the team with more experience than I had, the first time I was there. We had amazing results the first time I was there. So certainly I was proud of what we did and what we were able to accomplish the first time. We really built up a team, and, during my time there, we had some results on the technical, men's technical side, winning World Cups when we hadn't won in 18 years. I mean, we did some really special, fun things that were really rewarding, and I'm hoping to try to do some of those things again.
Yeah. So who replaces you at Park City?
That's the question right now for our board is putting out a search to find somebody to replace me. They're on, right now that's job one for them, our board.
Walt Evans has kind of served, I think, with you in some kind of consulting role all along?
He's done a tremendous job consulting. He was titled the facilitator during the process of bringing the different clubs together, both at the board level and at the actual staffing level. So he was very involved, and I see him continuing to stay involved as that facilitator in that role. He's done special projects for me this year, so he's really been behind the scenes. He's been there, and he's been a great help.
Yeah. So will he serve as sort of interim? Or because I think there's some overlap. I mean, you're leaving to take the national job May 1?
Yes. But I'll still be a transition period. I'll still be with the program through the end of May. And Walt will also help. He's now on board with special projects. So he'll continue to help carry the ball here as we transition.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to add?
Well, I just, it's been an incredible 9 years for me in the community, and we've had tremendous community support, and I've had the opportunity to work with some amazing people and learn from some amazing coaches that are in the programs here. So I certainly shout out to all the great work that's being done in the community with these teams, because what's going on is really special in this community.
Great. Well, again, congratulations. Jesse, thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Leslie.
Jesse Hunt, again, the new Alpine director for U.S. Ski and Snowboard. Utah State University master students are helping to prepare a bioregional report for Park City Municipal. On the phone with me to tell us more about that, I have USU Professor Barty Warren Kretschmar. Good morning to you, Barty.
Good morning.
Did I get close to that last name, Kretsch?
It's a tough one. It's Kretschmar. My husband is German.
Okay. Well, thanks for being with us. So tell me what it is that you're doing for Park City.
Well, the sustainability department has asked or reached out to us and asked us to work with them on some of their sustainability or their carbon sequestration goals that they're trying to achieve. Celia Peterson and Luke Carton. And the students have been working on this project for about two semesters now, and basically they're trying to do a bioregional plan. And so I guess maybe I should say what a bioregional plan is. In bioregional planning, we look at not only the sort of human systems that influence the landscape, such as housing and commercial and transportation, but we also look at the natural systems, such as habitats and water resources and vegetation that are important to protect in the landscape. And the students model these systems in GIS and try to develop alternative futures, basically looking into the future, trying to find a future land use plan that reflects both the growth of these human systems, but also where they are suited on the landscape. And maybe I should say, or I should have started by saying that we're looking at very large-scale planning issues, landscape issues, such as watersheds. And in Park City, we're not just looking at Park City, but we're looking also at the context of Park City and how it is embedded in the communities and the landscape around it.
So what would you do with, once this plan is finished, I mean, what would you do with it? It kind of drives what future development we do, or is it protecting the watershed, or it's lowering the carbon footprint, or all of the above?
Well, so we're looking at different alternatives. So we have, for example, one future that says what the landscape might look like in 20 years if we just keep doing what we're doing now. So if we just continue the policies that we're using to plan at the moment. Another one looks at what the development of the landscape would look like if we focus on the needs of the local community. And another one looks at how the landscape might develop if we're focusing on tourism or bringing in people from the outside, if that's our main thrust.
Yeah, so go ahead.
No, so these are futures. They are looking at potential development of the landscape, and then it is up to the community to say, well, I like this, or I don't like this, or maybe this is a good idea. It's a way of looking into the future and exploring alternatives that we might not have thought about.
So what direction, if any, have you received from the city?
Oh, lots. we start this whole process by the students have gone down to Park City and have met with many people in the city government, planning department. Celia Peterson has connected us with many stakeholders. And the students start by talking to stakeholders to identify what the issues are that are present and pressing in the study area. And in January, we had a geodesign workshop where we invited people from the city to come for 2 days or two half days into a room and talk about proposals of projects and policies that they think would improve different aspects of, you know, whether it's transportation or housing or commercial or open space. We built a consensus with them within 2 days about things that they think are important to reflect in our plan.
So when will these futures be presented to the public?
The students and I will be down in Park City on Monday, next Monday. I think it's April 30th, and we will be presenting these at 10 o'clock in the morning.
Okay. And the students are students of what? Planning? Public administration?
I coordinate the bioregional planning program in the Department of Landscape Architecture and Environmental Planning at Utah State University. So these are bioregional planning graduate students. They'll get a degree in bioregional planning, and also some landscape architecture graduate students. So it's a mix of two different degrees in one project.
Yeah, so what did it cost city residents then to pay for this study?
That's a good question. So far, the city has offered to pay our expenses, and up to about $15,000. But I don't think we're going to need all that money.
And are the students getting paid?
Are the students getting paid? There is a graduate student, a research assistant, who does get paid, but otherwise, these students get paid with experience.
Okay, yeah. Let's talk a little bit of just about your history. You spent some time in Germany receiving your PhD in landscape planning there. Tell me about how something in Germany works as opposed to maybe something in northern Utah.
Well, that's a very interesting question. These are two very different societies. And they look at planning in two very different ways. In Germany, everything is very regulated. It's planning is very much top-down. I'll put it very bluntly. Everything is forbidden unless you get permission to do it. And in the U.S., it's just the opposite, that we are regulation-adverse in the U.S., so you basically can do whatever you want until someone says stop. You need to do an EIS. So they're very different approaches to planning.
Which is more difficult to plan? Under what system?
It's difficult to get everybody in the boat in the U.S. You have to get everyone to agree on regulations, and it's more difficult to get everybody in the boat than to have someone from the top say, this is the way we're going to do it.
Okay, so again, the students will make this presentation next week. You'll get some more direction and then go back and kind of refine one of them?
I think what we'll do is we'll probably refine all three of them. We're looking at sort of a centerpiece of this project is trying to reflect the carbon sequestration goals of the city. I mean, there are some pretty ambitious goals to be net zero carbon by 2023, I think it is. We are looking at what that means in terms of land use. So it will be interesting to get feedback about that, and I'm sure they will refine their alternative futures, and it will hopefully end up in a report for Park City.
Okay. Hey, well, I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Barty Warren Kretschmar, again, is an assistant professor at Utah State University. Again, she and her graduate students preparing a bioregional report for Park City. Park City Republican Jack Rubin is in a three-way primary race with Ron Winterton from Duchesne and Brian Gorm from Vernal. This is for the District 26 Senate seat being vacated by Kevin Van Tassel. Jack Rubin joining me now in the studio. Good morning.
Leslie, thanks for having me.
So tell us a little bit about yourself and why you decided to run for office.
Yeah. I think might be good, I don't know if you've done this before, but just to lay out a touch about the 26. It's a huge district that follows U.S. 40 all the way from where it hits 80 out to Vernal. So it's a district that's been dominated by folks from the Uinta Basin forever, and as long as it's been a district, no one from this end has ever represented it. So that was something that I found pretty interesting. You know, Park City's a growing area. Summit County's a growing area. Our interests are significantly different than those of the Uinta Basin that's really an oil extraction and agricultural area. And I thought, I've toyed with this, queuing up my theme song, which is Mission Impossible. Can somebody from this end of the district actually represent us in the Senate?
Well, I'm guessing that you've kind of figured some of the numbers, yeah? I mean, is it possible for
you
to get through the
prime? It is very doable. There are two candidates, and you'll have Brian on and Ron on later in the week. They're both from out that way. I'm from the western end of the district. And One of the things that's interesting, what needs to happen, and I wanted to talk to you about this, is we need turnout. Because the seat has been dominated by the Uinta Basin forever, the turnout typically is in primaries around 30% out there, and it tends to be closer to high teens to 20% here. So if we can get the turnout at this end of the district, it is definitely winnable.
Yeah. Park City hasn't been gerrymandered out of this district, even though it's still a Republican race.
Well, it has been gerrymandered. This is the Mona Lisa of gerrymandering. Summit County has been sliced up, and so has Wasatch County. So unlike Deschene, Daggett, and Uinta that are entirely in the same district, we can't appeal to Summit County generally. The 19th comes in just on the north side of Interstate 80. So Jeremy Ranch and Glenwild are not in the district. Colville's not in the district. So it has been sliced up, and that's actually a huge issue because after the census in 2020, there'll be further redistricting, and without representation in the Senate, the chances of Park City and Summit County and Wasatch County all being further marginalized are huge. So there's a lot at stake here.
So back to the first question, it sounds like you're running for office just because it's never been done before.
Well, no. You know, there's a sort of a personal side to it, too. I followed politics for a number of years. I'm very proud of the fact I haven't run for anything since student council, which is in direct contrast to one of the other candidates who's very happy about having been on a number of boards for a number of years with, it's kind of hard to find out what actually was accomplished there. But I've followed politics for years, and the idea is that at this point in my life, I'd like to jump into the race, you know, drop the gloves, to use the hockey analogy, and actually get into the battle.
Yeah. So in terms of your career, I mean, are you retired? What did you do for a living?
Yeah, I was a pension fund management specialist. So I've read a lot of footnotes, done a lot of Excel spreadsheets, try to figure out the consequences of my decision, things that would happen over the horizon. And frankly, I think that's a skill that the legislature needs. You know, we've all heard the quote, we've got to pass it to find out what's in it. I would categorize that as legislative malpractice. Trying to find out the consequences, either first order, which is obvious stuff, second order, and third order stuff that's not very obvious, is stuff that if I didn't do that in my career, I wouldn't have had a career. So I think the legislature really needs to figure out and spend time, and I've kind of used this before, you know, an hour of planning, a dollar of planning is typically worth $10, $10 of remediation of trying to fix a problem that was created. Let's get it right the first time.
As you noted, I mean, a big difference between the residents of Uinta County and Park City. Again, you know, their economy basically based on fossil fuels, Park City tourism. Where are you here, though, on the spectrum? Because we've got this tourism and looking for, as we were just talking about, carbon sequestration, you know, I mean, yep. Moving out of that. So how do you fit in all of that?
Well, I think there's a number of issues. And I would, you know, Daniels Pass, I've driven to and from the basin a lot, as you might guess. And as you head out of Heber and go over the pass, you enter the Uinta Basin, and that is a oil extraction, minerals, and a lot of other things that go on out there. What goes on here is, and we've had, you know, unbelievable growth. They're trying to deal with maintaining the size of the area. And one of the reasons, going back to your first thing, do we have a shot? Yeah, we're growing and they're shrinking. So that's unfortunate for them, but it is fortunate for us. The two candidates, you'll probably hear them later in the week, will say, rural Utah needs a voice. My thing is pretty simple. There are 100,000 people in the 26th. We all need a voice. And there's a lot of stuff that goes on at this end of the district where we need representation. You know, if you take a look at the park record, HB 442, which is the end of the dining club license, that doesn't really have much impact in the basin. It's huge here. If you've got a low average ticket restaurant, you've got to make a decision. Are you going to be a bar or a restaurant when that really doesn't fit? Why are we trying to micromanage this economic engine that is really Utah's face to the globe? People come here to ski from all over the world, and we're fiddling around with a dining club license? That's insane. You know, somebody needs to get into the Senate and represent our interests, and that's me.
A three-way primary is unusual. Tell me how that happened.
Well, you know, you had Brantley Eason on earlier in the week talking about HB 54, which is the Republicans have made a mess of this. I'm embarrassed about it, quite frankly. You know, whether you can go to the caucus convention or collect signatures, there were four candidates in this race. Three of us collected signatures, which was actually a hugely valuable experience for me. My wife and I knocked on thousands of doors from one end of the district to the other. I've met thousands of constituents. I've been invited into their homes, heard their issues. Very valuable experience for me. And by virtue of getting 2,000 signatures, which is the cutoff for this race, the three of us are in the race. So there are three people in here, two from the basin and one from the back. Should be interesting.
So where do you stand on that, you know, the count my vote versus the keep my voice?
You know what? I'm not going to get into that fight. Leave that to greater minds inside of the Republican Party. I view myself as a customer of this issue. So three of us chose to wear belts and suspenders, and there are three people in the race.
So by all reports, the state convention was a marathon in frustration, bickering, and accusations, including delegates heckling Orrin Hatch. I mean, what happened there, in your opinion?
You know, I was fortunate. As a multi-county race, they wanted to get us out of the way. So we started at 8 o'clock. It wasn't terribly well organized, but it was done by, I don't know, 9:30 or 10. And quite frankly, with my business done and not being a state delegate, I got in my car and came home. My wife was a delegate. She came home around 5 o'clock. Shaking her head. It wasn't well organized, and that's unfortunate. You know, the party needs to put a better face on things and run it more efficiently.
Yeah. Now, when you have a respected lawmaker like Dave Ure of Summit County endorsing somebody from outside of his home county, what does that tell you?
Well, you know, there are historical relationships that take place in politics. You know, my thing, and I've told this to anybody who will, you know, hang into one of our question and answer periods. We've done them in Heber, we've done them in Roosevelt, we've done them in Vernal. You know, I'm not a log roller. As I told you earlier, I haven't run for anything since student council, and I'm quite proud of that. My objective is very simply to go to Salt Lake and try to represent the 26, represent the best interests of the 26. I've got a filter of criteria for things that pop up. You know, you have issues that you can explore in advance. You have issues that arise during the course of the legislature. So, you know, I'm a constitutionalist. Is it constitutional? I'm also a capitalist. So, you know, I like to talk about the Yellow Pages test. Is there somebody that's a commercial being that can do something? If there's a commercial person who can do it, the state shouldn't. You know, the state should do stuff that we can't do collectively for ourselves. So there's a series of things. Will it move the ball down the field? Let's not do stuff that feels good. There's a lot of feel-good stuff that goes on that, frankly, if I did that in business, I would have been out of business. So my objective is to try to accomplish stuff that makes sense for the 26th. I don't want to go to Salt Lake to make friends. I want to go to Salt Lake to accomplish things for our district.
The primary out effort, which encourages all voters to register as Republicans so that they can vote in the closed Republican election. What do you think about that?
You know, that's a tough one. It is self-serving for me. You know, if the guys from primary out wanted to find a candidate they could get behind, you know, that we're all citizens. We're all able to take advantage of the voting structures that the parties have put together for the primary. I'm not out trying to recruit Democrats. What I would like people to do is take a look at this, because this is a huge election for Park City. My two competitors are in their 50s. If they win, they'll become incumbents. They're likely to be into the seat for 2, 3, 4 terms. That could be 12 to 16 years before Park City has an opportunity to get a representative in the state house again.
Do you think you have an advantage? I mean, are they going to split the Uinta Basin vote?
We'll find out. You know, it's pretty early. It's early after the convention, so we finally know who the candidates are. So this is the first week after. But it's a brief window. Ballots go out the first week of June, so there are about 5 weeks where there'll be some tussling, I guess would be one way to describe it. We'll see.
So, I mean, do you bring any issues to this campaign?
And what do you mean by issues?
Well, I mean, something that you want to get out and...
Oh, absolutely. My single biggest issue that I'd like to bring forward is I would like to re-empower local government. You know, I've sat down with Andy. I've sat down with a number of the, you know, county council members here in Summit County, with town council members here in Park City, in the basin, talk to mayors, and they all go, in the sentence I've heard again, we'd really like to do, and then fill in the blank, comma, but the state, fill in the blank. you know, bigger governments tend to pick on little governments. You know, there's been a lot of talk about the 10th Amendment and how the federal government has overreached into the states. Well, that's great, but the states do exactly the same thing with the municipalities. You know, local issues should be decided locally. You know, we've got governments that have been set up to do it. They've been empowered by the state to do that. They need to be funded so they can execute. They understand the local issues. They live with the consequences of the local issues. Handle them at the local level. People say, what do you think about growth in Wasatch County? It's like, that's your wrestling match. You ought to figure it out. You ought to do the zoning. That's not a state issue. The big one that came up in this last legislative session was, you know, some guy trying to overturn the Park City disposable bag ban. That should have gotten about 10 seconds of airtime, and he should have been told to go home. That's a local issue. If Park City wants to ban, you know, single-use grocery store bags, that's our decision. That's not a state decision.
Any conversations with Kevin Van Tassel, other folks from the Uinta Basin?
Sure. Yeah, I'm out there all the time.
Yeah.
You know, very proud of the fact. Little Daggett County, you know, it's geographically large, but it's only got three delegates, and I was able to pull a third of their delegates at the convention. You know, I think that this idea of local government is one that resounds. I think the idea that representation for the entire district. I've sat down with the Uinta Tribal Business Council and talked to them about their concerns. Frankly, that's something that really I think needs some attention, because every time I talk to people in the basin, it's not the Indians, it's the Indian problem. To me, that's offensive. To them, that's offensive. We need a better relationship with the tribe.
You had mentioned at the Summit County Convention a major challenge for District 26 is transportation. It seems like it's a Summit County issue. Is that?
Oh, no. It is the 26. It is U.S. 40. You know, the trucks load up out there. They roll down 40. You know, people out there are very proud of improvements in 40. Well, what's that? It's passing lanes on the uphill side? I mean, like, come on. Let's move on. Trucking is very expensive. You know, it's dangerous. Goes through the middle of every town along the way, Roosevelt, Deschene, Heber. I don't know the last time you tried to cross Main Street in Heber, every 3 minutes, a tandem tank truck that weighs, you know, I don't know how much it weighs, 80,000 pounds or more, goes rolling through town. It's dangerous. 2 weeks ago, the cover of the Wasatch Wave had, you know, a conflagration in Strawberry. One of these things blew up. You know, that's nuts. So if that's going to, and it also constrains the oil production in the basin. Could we get a rail spur that's been studied for years? One of my competitors, you know, 2 years ago said it was on the brink. It hasn't come through. Let's get it done. That's much safer, much more efficient, opens the market for this heavy, waxy crude out there to more refineries instead of being basically a client of the refineries in North Salt Lake. And lo and behold, you know, if you're trying to diversify your economy, the Uinta Basin economy is over 50% petroleum. You know, if you can get other products in and other products out, can you employ people in the basin to do other stuff and not be subject to what OPEC decides at a Vienna pricing meeting for how things are going to go in the basin? Let's diversify that economy. The transportation issue is a pan 26 issue. It affects everybody from one end of it to the other.
Okay. Anything else you'd like to say?
No. I appreciate you having me on this morning. What I would tell the people of the Wasatch Back, that's Park City, that's Oakley, Peoa, Camas, Francis, Woodland, Heber, Midway. This is a big election. This is our last chance for probably 12 to 16 years to get a voice. Get out, register, vote. Please return your ballots. They'll be coming out the first week of June. I need your support. I'm asking for your vote. Thank you.
Jack, thank you. Jack Rubin, again, one of the three Republican candidates for Senate District 26 in the June primary.